Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for April 3rd, 2016. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome, Catherine Smith.
Good evening, everyone.
Yes, in case you didn't know, I think we said at the very end of last week, or maybe we didn't meant to, but Tim's on special assignment, if you will, Mississippi, Alabama, seeing some of his friends, but you know, the fact that he's going across the South might give him a little different perspective when he comes back next week. So that's where Tim's at, if you're wondering. But here in about 20 minutes into the show, we're going to have Martin Weinberg of Alabama on. Martin's been on a multitude of times, and given what's going on in Alabama, we knew we had to have a guest, and Martin's a great one to have, and he's going to fill us in about the Governor Bentley situation, maybe a little Martha Roby primary, why Trump seems to connect a little better in Alabama than some other states, and that's on what else we'll get to, but that's going to be coming up. But until then, Catherine, I mentioned, you know, the number one topic starter for any political show in the world, seemingly, Donald Trump. We've been watching this thing. It's always entertaining. And this week, it just seemed like it was amped up to a whole new level.
Yeah, I don't know what to, I don't know what to think about it anymore. You know, I think we all keep thinking, I mean, on April Fool's Day, I kept hoping that he was going to announce, oh, it was all just a joke, I'm not really running for president, but we didn't get that. We didn't get that, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the long con there, when you work it for this many months and then say that. But, you know, I mean, it was so bizarre. I mean, I guess we had the thing with the delegates. I mean, in Louisiana, he got turned out of some delegates. In Tennessee, even though he won Tennessee, they went and chose delegates. He had his slate. He didn't get them. He had people kind of charge the door. I think they had to call the police on the whole deal. They got the delegates they wanted. In South Carolina, even though it's winner take all, there's rumors he may lose some delegates there. I mean, this is a really concerted effort by the Republican Party to really not follow the will of the voters. Right, Catherine?
Yeah, and I think it's I can imagine being – I can't imagine being a Trump supporter, but I can imagine being the supporter of a candidate that's not favorably thought of by the party and how frustrating it would be to find them, you know, attempting to to take away their support through these sort of crazy rules or power struggles, and how frustrating those voters must be, and how frustrating it must be for Donald Trump. I mean, I'm not supporting his candidacy, but, you know, we're supposed to allow the voters to decide, and I don't know.
Well,
it's going to be an interesting convention.
Yeah, Catherine, I can hear what you're saying, and I understand it's almost like we're apologists for Donald Trump, but the thing is we can empathize with Trump and his supporters because we're used to Republicans trying to do these things to change the rules to get their way. It's just they're doing it to one of their own this time. And I think this could provide an opening for the Democratic nominee to actually talk to some of these people and say, look, we may not agree on a lot of issues. We're not going to build a wall. We're going to do some other things you want. But we know how it is, how this group operates, this group of privileged insiders of the Republican Party, and how they want to get their way by hook or crook and screw the will of the people over. Maybe then talk about, you know, what they've done with voter ID laws. I mean, this is very similar. They want their way, and they're changing the rules to get it. And Donald Trump's getting treated essentially like they treat the Democratic Party, right?
Yeah, you could make that argument. I'm not sure it's a very effective way to gain support from those from those Trump supporters, I kind of think their ideology will outweigh their sympathy or frustration. But it's not a ridiculous idea to try to appeal to them in that way.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, let's kind of put a pin in this. Call in, and I believe earlier, since it's the 205 area code, and that's Birmingham and the north half of Alabama, I believe Martin Weinberg's on the phone, and he's such a good guest, we don't mind if he's early. We just want him here.
Oh, yeah.
Martin,
you're on the phone. There's so much going on in Alabama.
Hey, David.
Martin,
hey,
you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. I just saw you up on the board. Sorry I had you on hold for a little while. And
I was just trying to make sure the call. It's been a while, so I was trying to make sure the call and number was still the same. I was just getting ready, reading back through some of the stuff that happened in Alabama over the last 2 weeks, and I feel like I need a diagram chart, like a Venn diagram, or it's like a law school, going back to law school and doing a logic problem to kind of keep up. I mean, this thing's a mess. I've studied politics and worked in a bunch of different places, but there is nowhere like Alabama politics. I mean, it's, you know, Chicago politics and Alabama politics, and I know every state feels like they have their corruption and craziness and zaniness, but I don't think anybody that I've talked to has seen anything quite like this over the years. So happy to answer y'all's questions and talk about it. And glad y'all got it right in Georgia. I mean, I don't with the vetoing of the marriage bill, so things can go on. So wish I had time to kind of keep up with that. And it seemed like that was kind of a treat to watch how that was done as well. But, we've been busy here the last couple weeks. And I don't think Alabama will ever be the same. For a number of reasons, but just I don't know how much the listeners know or the specific questions y'all want to ask. So just happy to do that.
We've been talking about Alabama for a few weeks now. Actually, we've been talking about it for a few months, going back to the budget cut situation that closed the driver's licenses, which I think ties in because how can you worry about fixing the budget if you're covering up? You know, you were talking about vetoing a marriage bill. He was vetoing his marriage. I mean, he Governor Bentley was just so far out
sure.
with and problems and having issues that he created himself. So let's kind of go back. You know, the way the internet works, we hear about things probably slightly like seconds after people in Alabama hear about it. But is this one where there were some rumors of this before it hit the press? Or in the state find out?
Sure. I mean, it went back probably about 2 years. I don't know if the actual infidelity rumors went back that far. I mean, I know that it started up at least in 2015. I'm trying to think of a timetable because, there was a lot of stuff that people weren't happy with that went back to the 2014 election. But it was a lackluster campaign back then. But I mean, the rumblings were starting, and anybody who's, I mean, I call them, you know, an inside baseball follower of Alabama politics knew something wasn't right based on, the kind of the way that the governor had come in, you know, in the first term. And I think a lot of the reason he got a pass during that first term was we had those just, Mother Nature destroying Tuscaloosa and actually parts of you know, Jefferson County, where I live, with the tornadoes. And Bentley got a lot of credit for, I mean, anytime there's a human nature disaster and someone does a good job, which, I mean, I think by all accounts he did. I mean, he worked well with the Obama administration, Congresswoman Sewell. So, I mean, I think it was kind of hard, you know, that first term. It was kind of, nobody thought he was the greatest governor ever, but, I mean, I guess he kind of got a free pass in terms of, leading into the second reelection, but there were some issues about his trooper that was assigned to his security detail that a lot of people hadn't really gone back to when this whole thing broke, but he was paying the guy, almost 100, I'd say well over $100,000 a year, somewhere between 120 and 150. I can't remember the exact specifics with all the overtime. I mean, this was a guy that was only supposed to be making 60 or 70 instead of, you know, using other people you had on duty. This was the guy you wanted, and that guy was – and now I think we know why. I mean, if it's going back that far, you know, the amount of overtime that he was getting, and anybody questioned it, they got shut up real quick. So I think that was the first sign. And, you know, Donald Watkins, who's a an attorney, you know, a businessman, I mean, pretty well known for some of the things he's done, you know, nationally, and he tried to buy Major League Baseball team in the 90s. I think it was the mid-90s, and wasn't successful, but had gained some national, you know, press over that. But he's been following Bentley and you know, had his own what he called Facebook and investigative journalism team on this because, you know, the local AL.com, they haven't really been digging deep. You know, when this stuff broke about 6 months ago, and I can't remember exactly. I think it had something to do with I don't remember the divorce. That's when I think, but it was right before the divorce, I think, when people got wind of it. So if you didn't know by then, I mean, I think surely everybody knew something wasn't right and, you know, something stunk in the state of Denmark when the divorce was going on. I mean, not too many people get divorced after 50 years, especially a sitting governor who's 70-something years old. So that's when, you know, some stuff broke about her. And if I can remember right, I mean, you know, some blogs and folks on Facebook post some stuff. But I think AL.com did a story about her. They couldn't quite get to it. But the reason it broke, I mean, I think they mentioned Mason because nobody really knew who she was. I mean, and that's the other thing about this. It's not a Bill Clinton, you know, Monica Lewinsky sex scandal. I mean, what I remember of it, you know, people want to make, oh, well, you know, you're hypocritical. You know, folks are hypocritical by pointing this out. But it's about the cover-up, the corruption, the pretty blatant description of this being a shadow government. I mean, his advisor, Mason, she's not on the payroll for the state. I mean, she's being paid by a separate group. So I guess they call it the Alabama Center for Government Excellence or something to that effect, which is, you know, maybe a nonprofit or some kind of lobbying. I mean, we're not really quite sure where the money's coming from. You know, so that's, I guess, in a nutshell. I mean, and the way this thing broke was that he fired the head of ALEA, which is, you know, the law enforcement agency that, you know, had merged. And this was a guy that was real close to Bentley, considered Bentley a father figure. And he had gone to Bentley and told him, hey, look, this is months, you know, I guess a couple of years, it may have been 2 years ago when he said, hey, when he found out about the affair, he said, hey, go, you know, if you're using state funds or anything like this, you're going to, you know, eventually it's going to come to light. And he said, take care of it. And then Spencer Collier saying Bentley called him back the next day and said, no, I'm not going to do that. And, you know, and eventually Collier was on leave, medical leave, and I think he did have back surgery, but then you know, he was just fired, I guess, 2-3 weeks ago when this whole – and I think it was about 2 weeks ago when the whole story broke, and then Collier released the tapes that Mrs. Bentley had given him, apparently. So, and that's when, you know, more and more started coming about salaries and, you know, the who's getting – you know, where's Mason's money coming from. And, I mean, you know, she finally resigned last week, I mean, after this thing going on for about a week, but Bentley has not resigned – not giving any kind of indication he's going to resign. I mean, there have been reports on, you know, from different media outlets, and there's, you know, federal investigations. Because, I mean, I think the state would have to recuse itself. I mean, they could start with the state, but, I mean, it had to be turned over to the federal. I'm sure it already has. But, you know, there's any number of potential criminal, you know, investigations that are going to happen and occur. I mean, I can't speak to the likelihood of this because I have no idea. I mean, we're – you know, the media is not – I mean, they're covering it, but they haven't been. So, you know, some of these – you know, there's Yellowhammer News, which is, you know, the big – and I would say it's more right-leaning, but, I mean, certainly they're doing a good job getting to uncovering the corruption and, you know, everything that's going on in Montgomery. So, I mean, they've been a big part of that. And then Donald Watkins and then – You know, there's been a couple other blogs. I can't really remember the names, but and folks have been covering it. And then, you know, there's been John Archibald with AL.com, but, you know, Watkins has been critical of AL.com because he was putting this stuff out there, you know, in 2014, you know, in the summer of 2014 leading up to November of 2014. And, you know, people said, oh, you're crazy and this and that. And, I mean, but I guess he was talking to, you know, some folks on the inside. I don't know if it was Collier or Mrs. Bentley or who, but, you know, and if this stuff would have gotten out, I mean, I don't know. I still think it would take a lot to defeat a Republican in an election statewide. I mean, I don't know that that would have happened, especially with Parker Griffith, who wasn't that. I mean, you know, I think he by the end of the campaign, he had kind of endeared himself back to a lot of Democrats. But, you know, still with the party switching and all that, I mean, there were a lot of people up in his, you know, the Huntsville area that I don't think he was the right candidate to do it. I mean, if there had been somebody else, you know, with all this going on, I mean, that's just, I don't know, it's a hard pill to swallow knowing that what would the voters have done if they would have known that it was at the level and you know, that this was going on. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at. And, you know, it seems like every day there's new stuff coming out. I mean, they're talking about, oh, well, Bentley and Mason, you know, the alleged mistress or, you know, shadow governor or de facto governor, as she's been called. They had a safety deposit box together, and, you know, Bentley made some remarks, oh, yeah, in case he died or something. You know, it just didn't even make any sense. And, I mean, I think everybody's wondering what's in that safety deposit box. I mean, I said last week we should have Geraldo come in and try to open this thing up.
Yeah, well, it sounds like the biggest thing is he created two enemies. The guy that worked for him, of course, his ex-wife, or his time wife, he created enemies. They knew the information, and that led to his undoing, correct?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if it wouldn't have been for that with Mrs. Bentley, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, what's, you know, I mean, that I don't think we'll ever know. I mean, but she obviously suspected enough because I think the recorded calls, these real creepy calls that we heard, and he's saying, oh, there was no physical relationship, but you heard them talking about him touching her breast and locking the door, and, you know, and then later the next set of recordings were him whispering in her ear and, you know, I love you and this sort of thing. So I don't know. I mean, I think that, I mean, how long did it go on that she, you know, before she started doing the recordings or somebody told her to do the recordings? I mean, yeah, I mean, if it would have been for her and Collier who felt betrayed, because that was a guy he looked up to. I mean, they started in the legislature together, and you know, eventually he took over the law enforcement agency. I mean, and you know, he felt like he got stabbed in the back. I mean, it was just as much a betrayal to him as it was you know, the first lady. So you know, and the thing is, you know, after they said, oh, the reason he got fired from Aaliyah was you know, he didn't just say, oh, we've moved on in a different direction, you know. And I mean, what you can do in Alabama, I mean, you can't in most southern states. I mean, not only that, but, I mean, he works at the governor's disposal. So, you know, it's a political appointment. So, I mean, he could have gotten rid of him any time. For him to say, oh, because there was some mismanagement of funds at Aaliyah, within a couple of days later, an audit came out saying, hey, there was nothing, no mismanagement of funds at Aaliyah. So if there was something else going on, so it looks like, oh, we're saying this is the reason we got rid of them. So now we have, okay, there's going to be a possible wrongful termination suit at some point. If you're saying that, hey, there was corruption and mismanagement of funds, when everything's pointing to the governor, and look, I don't know if there's any mismanagement of funds at this point. I mean, there certainly some things that I would look into in terms of campaign violation stuff, because you know, the way I read an article this morning saying, hey, the money that you know, there was about him going to get the cell phones at a Best Buy, these burner phones, that they spent almost $2,000, like $1,700 at Best Buy on some burner phones. So, and that was I think coming out of a campaign account. Well, that was in 2015. I mean, that's several months after the 2014 election was over, and you know, he said, well, that money was going to go to foster homes or orphanages or something. You know, that's what he'd been saying, and he's going to buy cell phones to use, you know, for his phone sex or illicit relationship is what the media reported today. Now, I mean, maybe there's another, you know, maybe they were giving these to domestic violence shelters, but nobody said that or shown that. But we know that some people from Best Buy, they went and interviewed him, and they said, yeah, but Governor Bentley came in here and, you know, was real discreet and got some burner phones. I mean, you know, if they were going to get, you know, phones for domestic violence victims, I mean, there would have been a press release and a big deal.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, and he's, I don't, I mean, I remember when these things have broken, whether it's been, you know, what South Carolina with Sanford and the Appalachian Trail, boondoggle and all that. I mean, and I think he weathered the storm. I mean, he didn't resign as long as I remember. Was that right? He didn't leave South Carolina, I don't think. But, I mean, he ended up, you know, running for Congress after that. I mean, of course, I don't think anybody expects that Bentley's, you know, this is his last term. I mean, he's 74 years old. So, I mean, look, he doesn't stop him. We've got Bernie Sanders running for president. So, I mean, it's not to say he can't run for something else, but I think he's got to be delusional at this point if he thinks that, you know, he's going to stay in politics and seek another office. I mean, I don't see him recovering from something like this. I mean, even if there's not any kind of criminal investigations, and surely right now, I mean, there's enough people that are mad and angered that, you know, there's going to be some investigations. I mean, that's where all signs have pointed. You know, and Watkins, who's the, you know, Donald Watkins, he said that he's been told that, you know, the governor and some people in the administration ordered some investigations on him and some of his banking operations because of him looking into all this. And, you know, so when you say, yeah, there's two people, I mean, I would say probably more than that because, you know, and I think that goes back to some stuff that was going on when Bentley ordered. You know, Donald Watkins was on the Board of Trustees, attorney for Alabama State, you know, it's a historically black college, and you know, there's some investigations and some stuff going. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not $1 million, were spent on an audit at Alabama State. And I think that was something else that Watkins and some other folks were upset about. That, I mean, why are you spending all this money to find something going on at Alabama State when there's all kinds of stuff going on in the state that, you know, other agencies and stuff, they know there's something. I don't know. I mean, if it was anything that they found there, it was something minimal. So, I mean, I think that's part of the reason that Mr. Watkins, you know, had gotten in on this and, you know, some other things that he had done, and he started looking into it. And, you know, I mean, that's what he's done for years. I mean, he was somehow involved in Detroit with exposing what went on there with Kwame Kilpatrick, the mayor. And I think his chief aide, he was having an affair with her. And I think so that's where Watkins, I think he'd drawn some parallels between this and what was going on in Detroit. So I don't remember what his exact involvement in that was, but I think he did testify at some level about what was going on in Detroit, you know, several. I mean, that's been some years now. I mean, I think it's been 6-7 years ago with Mayor Kilpatrick. But and if I'm not mistaken, he's still in jail. So, you know, and then other people are saying, well, I mean, you know, and we've got Bentley, you know, he's still in the governor's office, and he's got all these things that are, you know, these dark clouds and shadows above him. But, yeah, Governor Sigelman's still sitting in prison. And, you know, I think he's supposed to get out, I don't know, sometime within a year. But, you know, numbers and numbers of appeals have you know, and he was out, and then he's back in. And so I think a lot of people are looking at that from this angle, too. So, I mean, there's numbers of different – and we hadn't even gotten into the whole relationship between Mike Hubbard, the embattled Speaker of the House, who's facing over 100 indictments for, you know, pay-for-play, bribery-type stuff, or lobbying contracts, and, you know, somehow – and I guess that's the part that I haven't really delved into enough in terms of, but, you know, Collier was going to fill out some kind of affidavit. He was told by Bentley not to, and I think that was another issue. I haven't really connected that as much as, you know, and I was watching that, and I just figured, that's all going to come out, the Hubbard trial, which he was supposed to go to trial, I think, next week or the week after, but that's been continued again. So, you know, because it would have been in the middle of the session, and I don't know when that's eventually going to happen. I don't think that, you know, the last – he'd gotten continued earlier in the year because one of his attorneys had – or I guess his whole group of attorneys had withdrawn because they weren't getting paid. And then, you know, Hubbard had hired some new attorneys. So I guess it's reasonable, you know, with that big of a case. And then Matt Hart, the prosecutor, he'd had some back surgery. So I think he had done the latest – made the motion the latest continuance. So – I mean, it would be really interesting if there was the Hubbard trial was going on right now, which, I mean, it's not. I don't know when the date's been set because there's just been so much going on. It's every day there's something else.
And it sounds like y'all could have two chambers, and one could meet at the Capitol and one could meet at the jailhouse. I mean, you might have two governors that figure the house, no telling who else. Well, I'm going to pass it over to Catherine for some questions about this situation, and then I may have follow-ups or who knows. Catherine?
Thanks a lot for being on tonight, Martin. We appreciate
it.
Yeah. I'm always interested in what's going on in Alabama. There's always some craziness. But I think you make a really good point that that people will tolerate human failings, right? I mean, I think we all can relate to making mistakes. I think the thing that we don't like is when they lie to us. And I think that is the – and I think we learned that lesson. We've learned that lesson time and time again. I think Bill Clinton is a good example. I mean, he did fudge a little in his confession around Monica Lewinsky. But you know, the Band-Aid came off quick, and we moved on, right? But when you try to cover everything up with, you know – investigations and I think that people just lose their patience, right? They don't want, like, they don't, you know, as citizens, we want governing, right? Even if we might disagree on how that governance happens, you know, I might not agree with the, you know, conservative Republicans of Alabama, but we all want the government to work in whatever fashion we want it to work, right? But if everything's being stalled by investigations and cover-ups, I think we just get really frustrated, right? I just don't think we want that. That's not what we want. Just
no,
and move
know, Watkins,
on.
Exactly. And Donald Watkins, who I talked about today, I mean, he wrote something on his Facebook today saying, hey, I was going to, you know, have some more breaking news or something else that was going to really put some pressure on him. But what I want to talk about today is, hey, I got an email from a Shelby County teacher, which Shelby County, where Bentley grew up, and it, you know, it's probably one of the more conservative parts of the state. It's you know, outside of Jefferson County. So, you know, it's the suburbs. I mean, it'd be like in you know, in Georgia, I don't know, maybe a Forsyth. I mean, you know, I don't know, somewhere right outside, not Marietta or Cobb, but somewhere maybe another county out where, you know, there's been a lot of wealth that's moved out there. And, you know, more one of the –
Forsyth is a good
rich
analogy. Yeah, I'm familiar with Birmingham. Yeah. Forsyth is a pretty good analogy.
Yeah, so, you know, somewhere like that or, you know, maybe another – so she's a teacher, which she said, I supported Bentley twice. A whole other issue because watching anybody that's been a teacher – supporting Bentley twice now.
Right. Well,
And we'll get to that. I'll go back to that in a second. But so, you know, she said, hey, look, and Watkins said, hey, look, you know, I may not agree with the folks on the right, but I mean, the folks on the right are just as mad about the corruption and all that, that and the cover ups as the folks
and
on the left.
And
so,
the misuse of funds.
Sure,
I mean, Alabama is in
exactly
a terrible budget crunch.
I've never seen folks come together like this that are on opposite sides of the spectrum. Now, there are a lot of people scared that are in the inside baseball politics and, you know, on Capitol Hill and sort of stuff like that. That you've heard a lot of quiet tones amongst the politicians and lobbyists and those sort of folks, of course. But I think it's time for reform government in Alabama. I mean, you know, it'll be nothing like we've seen before when – all this finally gets unturned, because I think it'll have to. I mean, I think there'll be so much pressure that, you know, federally they'll have to do something, or the folks are just fed up with it. So, I mean, I think that, you know, folks are going to come together to really reform campaign finance. I mean, you know, and there were some campaign finance reform stuff done. That was kind of the irony of the whole thing with Hubbard, because, you know, he had been the storm in the state house, and we're going to do campaign form. And, you know, and those were his rules that he violated, that he was indicted on. So I think we will see a lot of fun. I mean, that's my hope. I mean, I'm being optimistic about this, but I think that, you know, it will have you'll see somebody, you know, in the next governor's race, next legislative races, you'll see a lot of reform candidates. I think we'll have some reaching across party lines of folks that aren't, you know, feel like they're indebted to the smoke-filled, you know, backdoor politics deals. I mean, I think that will be the good that comes out of it. Because if you look at it, and I mentioned with a teacher voting for Bentley, Bentley was able to get in, you know, in 2010, in a lot of ways because of the support of AEA, which wasn't happy with Bradley Byrne, who's now a congressman from Mobile. You know, after he lost, he, you know, one of the congressmen retired. And so he, I think, I don't know, maybe it was 2014 or a special election he won, and then he won again in his primary this year. But he was seen as a reform. You know, I think the education was really scared about, and AEA was really scared about him. So they kind of made a deal and said, okay, we're gonna see if we can't get Bentley. They supported Bentley in the runoff, AEA, and there were a lot of Democrats that you know, because there wasn't a lot of competition on the this one. We had Archer Davis and Ron Sparks, but you know, not a lot of people felt like, and I think that was before the runoff. So I think they had a lot of people crossing over, or supposedly crossing over, and it didn't really matter because Bentley won in a landslide. But, you know, he got a lot of support from moderates. And, I mean, he was seen as this holistic family guy who had been a doc, dermatologist, and all shucks, you know, in the legislature. And that's why I think a lot of it hurts folks like this lady that I was saying, that you never expected this. I mean, this guy that had been married for 50 years, had, you know, four adult sons, grandchildren, was a doctor, you know, and then gets wrapped up in something like this. I mean, you know, so even when people were talking about this 2 years ago or 6 months ago with the divorce, I mean, it still wasn't enough, you know, for people to be convinced that he didn't have the best interest of the state. You know, I'm not going to take a salary. He hadn't taken a salary. And, you know, so until we got job creation back and the budget back where it needed to be, I'm not going to take a salary. And so I think people wanted, the way he handled the whole thing with tornadoes and, you know, just him being this whole family values type guy, that was the shock and surprise when a lot of this came out. And so how do people view this? And, I mean, I think there are a lot of people that are still saying, hey, this is Mason kind of, you know, got in there and it was all her, you know, which I can't, you know, believe that. I mean, I don't know what he was like before all this, but I mean, because a lot of people, you know, there have been articles talking about how much his friends said he'd changed, and, you know, in terms of, like, you know, him wearing Dockers, going to Brooks Brothers suits, which, you know, within the first term and the second term, I don't know. I mean, I haven't been up there. I mean, about the only involvement I've had, you know, in the last, I was up there for involved in the DMV closing issue, and, you know, we had a meeting up there at the governor's office. He was cordial and nice, and, I mean, I didn't feel like we were really getting anywhere, you know. I mean, but I mean, other than that, I mean, it's been quiet relatively until the divorce happened. I mean, I think there were people that didn't feel like he was effective even within the Republican Party, you know. And we thought maybe he'd get a challenge from the right, and you know, he kind of escaped that because there had been talk up until, you know, I guess in the qualifying in 2014, that he was going to get somebody a little bit stronger to challenge. I mean, I think he had a couple of folks, but, I mean, he still ended up getting 80% of the primary vote. So, but it wasn't like he had a strong challenge from the right. And then I think it was the biggest margin in history, in Alabama history, in terms of a general election result. I mean, I think Parker Griffin only got 30-something, I mean, you know, low 30s. So, and spent a decent amount of money.
And I think you touched on a few things. I'll make comments on the next question. One, I think, like a lot of Republicans, you know, Governor Bentley got lucky. He got to run in 2010 and got to run for election 2014. It's so hard to get defeated as a Republican when you run in those off years. And so that probably inflated his margins and things like that. Second, you talked about the teacher. Now, one thing I've noticed is, you know, if not a majority, certainly a plurality of teachers are married white women. And they don't really vote their profession as much as they vote their other demographic categories. They may vote a little more Democratic than the average married white woman in Alabama or the South, but they still tend to go back to that instead of their profession. But my next question for you is about another white woman, if you will, the mistress, Rebecca Mason. I forgot her middle name.
Caldwell
Mason. Tell us about her. You said she was kind of an unknown. Kind of give us a little background on her.
Yeah, she's a public relations specialist. She'd been a TV anchor at the news station in Tuscaloosa, and somehow had gotten wrapped up in his, involved in his campaign, and that led to her becoming the advisor. I don't think it was right away. I mean, I'm thinking that it was like, 2011 or 2012 when she got the job, and, they created this job for this 501c4. Created a job for her. And so, she was his advisor. I guess she was, I don't know where her office was or anything. And I think she was driving around, they're driving round trip between Tuscaloosa and Montgomery. And then at some point her husband, who was a weatherman in Tuscaloosa, making, $50,000 or $60,000 a year, got a job, over the state faith-based and volunteer or something, and they created some agency where he's over the state faith-based. And everybody says, nice guy, he's run the office. Well, I don't know what they're supposed to do. I mean, I don't know what the faith-based, that's kind of the other. I mean, it was almost like you couldn't write that joke that the governor's mistress husband is over the state faith-based agency. And, how did he not know? I mean, a lot of people I don't want to get into their business. I mean, but how do you wonder? I mean, how much did he know, or he knew, and he was benefiting from this? So, this whole relationship, and whether it was real or just a phone sex type thing. I mean, who knows? But that's the question. I mean, why was this guy getting paid all that? And then they were also getting money from the campaign. So, that's another issue. I mean, there's certainly. It's definitely not unprecedented for somebody to work for the campaign and then also get a job. I mean, that's where a lot of people in government come from is they're on the campaign and they got hired on. Then, if they get reelected, there's another campaign, they'll go back to the campaign, And so, but I don't know if they left, came back. I mean, I think that stuff's still kind of being, vetted and trying to figure out exactly, where the money, if that was campaign money or not. But in terms of working for like another administration or something, no. I mean, wasn't somebody that had been a politician. She'd been in media relations and spin and that sort of thing. So I don't know how much influence she had. I mean, there were a lot of reports that she, from Collier and other folks that have left. And I don't know if any of those names have been released, but, they published these articles. And, that a whole other issue on, the use of source, because we know when stuff happened in Watergate and other scandals, I mean, a lot of that was done by Deep Throat and other unnamed sources. But, there was a lot of talking. Well, we didn't have any – some of the reporters, we didn't have any sources that, we didn't have their names. When you do this sort of stuff, people's lives are going to be endangered. That's not conspiracy theory. I mean, it is conspiracy theory talk, but it's also real and valid. I mean, it's not just house cards type stuff. We know that people's lives and jobs are going to be in jeopardy. So, of course, they use unnamed sources. Well, I mean, I think that was part of the reason they said the story didn't break as quick as it did, because they didn't have people that were willing to go on the record. That's why the blogs and other sources that may have not felt like, okay, they've had to hold themselves to this high of a journalistic standard were able to break it first. What they've said about Mason, is probably what we know. I mean, is there more to know? I don't know. I mean, I guess she's, mid-40s, mother of three or four kids and married to this John Mason, who was a weatherman and, then worked his way into the state-based faith agency. So, What does she do now? I have no idea. I mean, I think it's going to be tough for her. I mean, I'm sure she'll you know, be able to get some kind of job. I mean, I don't know if she's, you know, but she's got a, I don't know, she wasn't working for the state. So, I mean, maybe that protects her in terms of the ethical stuff. I mean, in criminal investigations, I don't know. I mean, I think there are people that feel like that, you know, maybe that money was publicly funded, or where did the money come from? And I mean, was she even supposed to be in the, or was she involved in taking these trips? And I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, is she going to talk to investigators first and try and cut some kind of deal? I mean, that would be the logical assumption, but nobody's really lawyered up though. I mean, that, you know, and I guess they don't want to give the perception that there are these investigations or the stuff going on. But, I mean, Billy's issuing his – I mean, from my knowledge, he's been issuing his comments himself. I mean, it hadn't been through his, you know, official legal counsel or outside legal counsel. You know, and even with the divorce, as far as I remember, I mean, the attorneys may have made some kind of no-comment remark, but otherwise it was, you know, them speaking themselves. So, I mean, nobody's really lawyered up yet.
Yeah, you describe this whole background of these two. She ought to write her memoir. He can, if he's, you know, back reconciled with her, John Mason can co-write it with her. They can sell it to Will Ferrell. Plot for Anchorman 3.
Right.
You know, sounds perfect. I'm sure there's some jokes there. Well, you mentioned the driver's license situation, and that's, I guess, not directly tied to this, but you could say if he's done a better job watching the budget, he wouldn't have had to cut so many driver's license offices. How are the people of Alabama responding to this? And it's not just the voting. It's the just, I want to get a driver's license portion of this thing, too. How are the people taking these closures?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of falling back a little bit. I mean, there was a compromise saying, okay, we're going to open them one day a week. And my argument was, when I was involved in that, I think there was a certain element that it's about, you had all these civil rights groups and said, hey, it's about you know, voting issue. Well, to me, it's not just about voting. It was an economic issue for you know, and it wasn't just drawing down racial lines. I mean, it was rural versus urban. Hey, some of these places are several hours from the interstate. I mean, you go down in the Black Belt, you know, Selma, Marion, Perry County. I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know that Georgia. I mean, I've had the opportunity the last couple of years to drive around Georgia, and it seems like the access to the interstate. I mean, you've got, it's not as bad. I mean, I'm sure there's counties in Georgia where, you know, reaching into Appalachian, that sort of thing, where they're not. But imagine that, you know, you
well,
can
Georgia,
only go
Georgia
one day a week.
Just to background, Georgia has state patrol offices outside of the interstate. There's one in my county. There's one in the next county down. And you can use any of them. You don't have to be just in that county. So I think, you know, when you hear the whole jokes about the DMV.
Right.
And I've gotten driver's licenses in three counties in Georgia now. I guess I got 156 to go. But it's not like the old jokes you hear about California and stuff. We have very, very good access. I mean, Alabama may have had that before. I guess it's nothing like that anymore, though.
Yeah, so, well, and I think the difference, I mean, I think, you know, in Alabama, for a state its size, and we have 69 counties, I mean, to me, a high number. I mean, you've got, you know, larger populated states. I mean, y'all, I know y'all have, what, 100, what is it, 160-something counties?
Oh, 159.
So, I mean,
everything has to be a horse ride, a day's horse ride from the courthouse. That's the rule.
I mean, every county had a DMV inside the in the courthouse or a place to get a driver's license, nothing else. I mean, in Jefferson, now you can take – now, taking the test is a whole different thing. I mean, I guess they would go to the court. Most of the counties, you go to the courthouse to take the test. I mean, there's multiple places, you know. I mean, if you're in the Jefferson area. Now, the story I told was before this even happened with the closures, my nephew last summer, you know, he just turned 16, and I was taking him to get his permit. Well, we kept going to different DMV, and this was before the closure. You know, we had to go to three or four different times. I mean, you had to go at 6:30, 7 in the morning to get in line, and then, you know, like one time the computers were down, another time we sat there and waited, and they were like, oh, we're not taking anybody else for the day. I mean, this was just to take the permit test. This wouldn't even do the driving test, which, you know, or if you had something else, you know, renewal or something else, you know, or not a renewal, but if you were going from a different state and had to get it transferred over or something like that or an eye test, you had to wait in that line. We tried to drive out to a couple of these rural areas just because we thought, oh, the lines wouldn't be as bad. I mean, because, they, you know, they're, at this point they're open every, you know, 5 days a week, and we get there and you know, I mean, they can only, you know, handle a certain amount of people before lunch. So, and then they may close for the day, so we're not going to take any more people because we'd rather not have all these people sitting here waiting. I mean, this was before the DMV closed. And then it closed, and they said, okay, well, we're going to close in all these states, most of them, you know, poor and predominantly minority counties, but some of them are just rural counties. I mean, you know, that and that, so that's why I was trying to explain to folks, I'm saying this isn't just cutting down a racial or even poverty line. I mean, it is, of course, you know, in terms of an economic issue. You know, if somebody just turned 16 or, you know, needs to go get their license, we you know, it's not, they got to take a whole day if they're going to go to, you know, they can go to another county. It's going to take them a whole day to do all that. So, I mean, somebody's going to have to take off work. You know, so, I mean, I felt like we should have gotten more traction on people understanding the inefficiencies in government when stuff like that happens. You know, we just were able to do online registrations, I guess, or renewals, you know, with your driver's license in the last year. So, I mean, this is the first time, you know, I was able to do an online renewal for my driver's license. So, you know, but a lot of, there's not a lot of internet access and or it's real slow in some of these counties. I mean, you know, it's not like we're, you know, it's still like going back about, you know, like dial up AOL type thing in some of these counties. So, I mean, you know, just because there's not as much, I mean, which to me doesn't even make sense. You know, a lot of people don't, you just assume everybody's got access to the internet now. I mean, that's not necessarily the case.
Oh,
so,
I know that's not the case. Yeah, a lot of people jump to.
Yeah.
I mean, people talk about that about voting too. They're like, "Well, why don't we just vote online?" I'm like, "Cause like a huge amount of people in the country don't have access." And I mean, there's a lot more complications to that. But this assumption that everyone has, you know, broadband access to the internet is a real problem, especially.
Yeah, I think it really is, and I think that when we started not making about the voting, because people get turned off. I mean, I think it's important. We need to discuss. Was this? I don't think it was. I don't, and I still don't think it was that the closure was done because there was, you know, they were doing it to make an impact on voting rights or registration. I mean, you know, you could still register. I mean, that's not, you know, the whole voter ID thing. That's. It definitely is something that needs to be addressed. But talking about the closing of the DMV for that reason, I mean, you can still get a star ID or an ID at the probate court or something else. To me, it was a driver's license, and that became economic. And that was what I talked about, you know, we met with the civil rights leaders and the governor and, you know, his advisors. I said, look, you know, it's not a this isn't just about voting rights, because they took that approach. They were getting defensive when they said, hey, it's about voter ID and voting rights. I mean, that's just, I mean, any way we want to slice, I mean, that's just down the middle. It's become a partisan issue. It shouldn't be in terms of the voter ID issue, but, I mean, it has become one. And I've said, look, we don't want to use this to become more divisive. We want to let people know, hey, look, government's just not working for us. I mean, you know, if we have to have if the government service we have to have, you're telling us you have to have a license, you have to have insurance. And then we're getting into the question, well, somebody have a license, they can't get insurance, or somebody can't get insurance, you know, the whole back and forth with that. I mean, we're going to have people driving around uninsured, not licenses. It's hard to collect these, you know, fines and that sort of thing. I mean, we don't have the people to enforce that anyways. So that's what we don't want. And that was another argument going back to when we had the whole immigration debacle. I can't remember the number of the immigration bill. We had that very horrible immigration bill a few years ago with you know, having to have all this identification stuff. And I said the worst thing about this is, regardless, you don't want people driving around uninsured. That's going to affect the state economically worse than whatever benefit you think is going to keep, you know, have to not have to provide services to folks. I mean, you're going to have to provide them regardless. You know, whether it's medical or schooling. I mean, you know, I don't think that we should get past all that. You know, say, oh, we, you know, And that's why the immigration, I know we're getting way off on a tangent, but I think that that's an area that we can, you know, because people always ask, why are people keep voting against their self-interest? You know, poor folks in the South voting against their, because the wedge issues aren't the wedge issues they were, you know, 10, 15 years ago in terms of gay marriage and guns, you know. I mean, Second Amendment stuff, and that's still something that we just got to work on how we frame that. But, I mean, in terms of you know, gay marriage and that sort of thing, it's not the wedge issue that it was. I mean, generally, I mean, support's gone up, even in conservative states, you know, when stuff happens. So we can bridge people together. We've got to start talking about these economic issues. And to me, that was an area that we should have capitalized on that more with the DMV. And I think the corruption, like I said earlier, the corruption stuff is kind of bringing people together. And, you know, the other issue was Bentley just giving a lot of folks raises. You know, even after the whole budget, I mean, that was like less than a month ago where he was proposing all these raises to members of his staff. So,
well, that could
about,
have been money to hush him up possibly if it was.
Oh, no
in.
Question.
Like,
I mean, right. I mean,
something.
That'll be stuff
yeah.
that, yeah, I mean, they may get deposed and subpoenaed about, you know, the records about that stuff, but you got to think about it. I mean, when that's going on, and then the amount of legal fees that were spent, you know, on the state challenging the you know, the same-sex marriage and same-sex adoption cases, you know,
and the Planned Parenthood bill, the Planned Parenthood,
sure, the Planned Parenthood,
and that cost $100,000.
Yeah, I mean,
that cost the state of Alabama $100,000.
Oh yeah, I mean, we're talking about millions of dollars in legal fees that were spent that, you know, could have gone elsewhere. So. I mean, even without this, I don't think there's any question that nobody thinks that Governor Bentley was this great, you know, progressive governor. I mean, you know, and we've had some, you know, Republican governors in the South, you know, I don't know who they are per se, but, I mean, we've had some that have been likable and, I mean, have gotten some bipartisan support, just knowing how hard it is to elect a Democratic governor in the South. I mean, you know, I don't know who the last one was. I mean, I know Barnes was the last one in Georgia and Siegelman was the last one in Alabama, but.
Musgrove. Mike Beebe of Arkansas just left. He won re-election, would have won a third term if he could have ran for it. There's a guy that, you know, Earl Ray Tomlin in West Virginia, that's sort of Southern. There are a few. Hey, well, let me go ahead and ask another question that has a little bit of national implications. Donald Trump, you know, he's been making news all year, but it seems like he caught fire and is a little more popular in Alabama than a lot of other states. I remember those two rallies he had. I think one was in Madison, which is near Huntsville. One was down in Mobile in the same stadium they play the Senior Bowl in. And, you know, people were like, well, he didn't fill it up, but he had like 35,000 people, some ridiculous number there for a political rally. Why do you think Donald Trump is connected so well in Alabama, maybe even more so than a lot of other states?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, one is Jeff Sessions is one of the only sitting politicians. You know, he's our state senator, and, I mean, he's right with Donald Trump on the building the wall and all the immigration policy. So I think Sessions' appeal and favorability ratings, you know, with conservative folks here, and that's helped for one when Sessions came out and endorsed him and supported him. So I think that was one thing that helped. And I don't know if Mo Brooks, I don't know if he did or not, but I mean, I think that the politicians have been a little more open to him and encouraging. So, I mean, that was one. And then I just think that, you know, I've read some studies saying, hey, it's not even as much with Trump, you know, a right-wing thing or Democrat-Republican thing. It's just these people want an authoritative, you know, that type of person. And maybe there's just more of that in Alabama because we, I don't, for whatever reason. I mean, it could be education. It could be, you know, just cultural and religious. I don't know. I don't know. And some of that could be the other campaigns that spend the resources here because – you know, it's a smaller state, and Trump said, okay, just a better political move. I mean, we saw, this Hillary was, you know, I think Alabama tends to be on the extremes, too. So, I mean, this is one of Hillary's best states, you know, even in the South. I mean, she got 80-something percent, and, you know, Bernie spent some resources here, but you know, not whole lot, and then, you know, Trump. So I just think it's one of those things with the extremes and probably the media too, you know, the way they framed it. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. I haven't looked at the numbers and seen what Trump got, you know, and I imagine Mississippi's probably similar. You know, I don't know what the final tally was in Georgia, but
it's just
you know, Trump.
Outdoor rally. Probably his best outdoor rallies both happened in Alabama and
the other thing is you've got Mobile, you've got people all over the Gulf Coast can get there pretty quickly. I mean, you know, Florida and New Orleans and so I mean it's more centrally located. And if you look at Alabama if you look at Alabama, it's really more centrally located in the south than Georgia. You know, Georgia's a little bit farther to the east. So, you know, Alabama should have, I mean, you know, going back to the, you know, Wallace era, the 60s and 70s, I mean, I don't think there's any question that Alabama, you know, Birmingham could have been what Atlanta is because it was more centrally located. I mean, you know, it's the politics kept it from being that way. So, you know, I mean, I think we go back that far to these divisive and politics that we don't have necessarily in you know, some other states. I mean, it's just unfortunate, but you know, it's the way it's been for, you know, the last 40 or 50 years.
Yeah, well, hey, if it wasn't for the Yazoo land deal, Alabama would be the central part of Georgia. Mississippi would be the western part of Georgia, and what's currently Georgia would be the eastern part of Georgia. Catherine, we got time for like one more question. We got congressional races, Senate races. Anything you want to ask Martin about?
I'm not ready. Go ahead. You have a question. I know you have.
Okay,
a question.
That's okay. Well, let me ask you. Let me ask you about that primary race. This will be the last topic, Martin, even though we didn't cover it all. Martha Roby came in. I guess she's been up there two or three terms down in southern Alabama, and she is now seen as not conservative enough, and they're Tea Partying her. Is this going to work, or is this going to be a situation where more of an establishment Republican actually turns back a Tea Party challenge in the South?
Yeah, I mean, we just had our primaries on March 1st, and I don't think
what
she
happened?
Yeah, I mean, she won, and I mean, I think it wasn't even
the
closest. Yeah, it didn't materialize. I mean, I don't know if that was and this was a Tea Party. I think her name Becky Gerritsen that you know, had gotten some fame through something she did down, you know, with the Tea Party stuff. And I think it had to do with that tax issue where they were targeting folks. The IRS was supposedly targeting some Tea Party folks. I think she built up some momentum on that. You know, I mean, Roby's gotten a lot of press. I mean, you know, she, I mean, good and bad. I mean, I think she was in the whole Benghazi email stuff. I mean, she was all over the news for that. And while nationally it didn't, you know, make her look like, you know, a shining star. I mean, I think it kept her in the media eye. And I mean, she was a city councilwoman in Montgomery, and, you know, that's the biggest region in the state. It would just take a lot. I mean, you know, we hadn't really, other than, what was the guy's name, Cantor in Virginia, I mean, we really hadn't seen too many of those, you know, Tea Party folks.
Well, Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz are situations where they beat establishment candidates. I mean, David Dewhurst, Charlie Crist. And you know, I'd heard this may be one of those situations, but it didn't.
Yeah,
happen.
I mean,
I think
Alabama's is right.
Alabama
right.
Has their primary with their presidential primary. They stack
yeah,
them
I
together. I guess
to
save
right.
a little money.
Sure, I don't think Alabama's is right for that, but, you know, Texas or Florida is. I mean, it's still an old school political state. I mean, Roby, her dad's a former federal judge, and so I mean, she was politically connected, and so I mean, she has a lot of I guess goodwill within the party, and just, you know, with the voters. I mean, having served on the city council, I mean, it would take a lot to. And I don't know, I can't remember what the situations were in Texas or Florida. It would take a lot though in Alabama. Mo Brooks up in North Alabama, I mean, he was kind of the Tea Party guy, and he beat Parker Griffiths, but I don't, you know. Other than that, I mean, you know, it hadn't been as divisive as some of these other states. I mean, I think you look at it as district, I think it's hard for somebody to win, you know, a district. And there was a challenge to Shelby, and, you know, that guy had a whole host of issues. I don't think he had nearly enough money. I mean, you know, I think he got 20-something percent of the vote. I mean, that was about as close as, you know, there's four or five people in that Senate race. And Shelby just spent a lot. I mean, you know, I mean, he's 80-something years old, and so maybe this is his last term. But he spent a lot of money to push that guy back. But, you know, I mean, I don't think we've seen – I think we have more of that in the legislature than we do in Congress. But even some of those folks on the legislature, I mean, some of them were seen as not workable, and they got kicked out. I mean, there were a couple that I can remember. You know, I think one of them was the guy Shadrach McGill that was, you know, one of those – he ran for I think he ran for U.S. Senate, and he – I don't think he got 10%. You know, he was a former legislator, the guy that on the Tea Party wave. But I just don't think we're ready, you know, as much as a Florida or a Texas.
Well, and the Tea Party movement may move on by then, and it won't be a factor. Well, Martin, we thank you for being on the show tonight and informing us about Alabama.
Yeah, I hope it was interesting, and I hope folks will follow it and see where this thing goes. And you know, I don't want it to be something that was in the media's eye for a couple weeks and then everything goes back to normal. You know, it's just something that we've got to be focused on, and that, you know, citizens can make a difference. I mean, that's what happened in this. I think if the citizens wouldn't kept a lot of the pressure, that we wouldn't have seen a lot of the stuff uncovered as it did.
All right. Well, thank you again, Martin. And
okay, thanks.
Catherine?
Thanks for
good night. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for the Kudzu Vine. Good night.
We are the heirs of that.